Hello and welcome to Python 411, Computer Programming for Everybody. In a recent podcast, I mentioned doing the basic installation of TurboGears and being quite impressed with how easily it went. I actually installed it on a Mac, on a Windows machine, and on a Linux machine. So in the past week, primarily yesterday, this is Sunday the 23rd, so yesterday, Saturday the 22nd, I went through, again, the entire 20-minute video and the 11-page tutorial, and I set up the wiki and went through the whole thing. So that's what I'm going to go over in this podcast first, is this a more in-depth look at TurboGears, which some of you have written in and said you would like to hear about. But there is more, so hang in there. If TurboGears isn't your bag, after TurboGears, I'm going to talk about five or six other tools of a more simple and straightforward nature that can also help you do CGI and web programming and other kinds of programming. So that's what this podcast is about. So jumping right in, and I'm presuming that you can print out the tutorial. First, watch the video, which Kevin Rangore goes through quite quickly, but it's very helpful. On the very first section, the quick start, I did find one little thing. It says to type tg-admin /quick start. And that never worked for me because it couldn't find that command. And when I watched the video carefully over again, I noticed that instead of typing tg-admin, Kevin actually typed turbogears-admin/quick start. So little things like that you'll pick up from the video. It's hard to get these things absolutely correctly, I guess. But then really what you do is you create a directory for the wiki. He calls it Wiki20. I use the same name. And then you type this command, turbogears-admin/quick start, and it creates basically all the files that you'll need for your wiki. And then, really, you type a Python program in. You do Python wiki20-start.py, and it creates a wiki. And right on your local computer, if you then type into your web browser the location, http://localhost:8080/, you'll see right there is your wiki, which is within 1 minute of starting this tutorial, you get a lot of feedback, positive feedback, that it's working properly, which is very good. Now remember, this wiki you're creating and the server you're running, a TurboGear server, a Cherry Pie server, it's running right on your machine. So it's not running on a remote server. And if you want to run it on a remote server, you're going to have to do that completely separately. So this is running on your machine. So then you start to make your wiki. And this is the one area where I had the most difficulty. Nothing to do with TurboGears, really. Because what you have to do now is you have to set up pointers in a config file to your SQL or SQL database, which can be SQLite or SQL whatever. Well, it turns out that on my Mac, there was a problem with the setup of my SQL server, which I had a devil of time figuring out. And the only way I figured it out, really, was my 17-year-old son happened to be wandering by, and I pleaded for his help. And so he came into my room, and it took him a half an hour to an hour of he had to go back and install SQL Server from scratch, from source, shall we say. And then he kept getting errors, and his eyes would scan the logs as they went over the screen. You know how they go very quickly when you ./configure, make, install something on a Unix machine. And I tell you, young people's eyes move a lot faster than old people's eyes, and he was able to pick out various errors and trace them back to the root cause and then plug them into Google. He would, you know, highlight these sections, plug them into Google, and go find other people who found a similar problem. It turns out a lot of people have had the same problem on the Mac trying to install SQL servers. And it all came down in the end to a certain header file, which wasn't there. And if you go to the Apple page for SQL Server installation, it says it's in a certain directory, and it's a lie. It's not there. So thank God I had my 17-year-old son. Now, hopefully, if you're installing on Windows or Linux, you won't have that problem. But if you're installing on a Mac, the only thing I can recommend is that you go to the Apple website, look up SQL Server installation help, and for Mac OS 10.4 or whatever, and then look where it says the header file for SQL Server is going to be, and then it's not there, so you've got to go find that header file and install it manually there. Okay, sorry to take so much time in such detail, but believe me, even though TurboGears is easy to install, you do have to be able to deal with these kind of things. And these are the kind of things that on any complex Python program are more likely to cause me problems than anything Python related. It's the setup and installation and version conflicts and things. Now, my son gave me some advice because he says he never has problems like this. And the reason he's convinced the reason I have this problem is because I have installed, played around, and installed so many different versions of the same thing in many different cases that I have version conflicts everywhere and that I borked my machine. Well, of course, I denied it and told him it's not true, but, you know, I do play around a lot, so maybe that's part of it. Try to keep a clean machine, and you may not have these problems. Okay, but once I pointed successfully to the database, then I restarted the wiki with Python wiki 20-start.py, and I created the database with a TurboGears-admin SQL create command. These are TurboGears commands, and that created the wiki page. Then it walks you through in the tutorial, or in the video, which moves too fast to follow, really. But in the tutorial, it walks you through setting up and putting new words and new fields for text entry in the wiki using the KID templating language. Now, remember, TurboGears is a mega framework which uses the KID templating thing. Now, if you're beginning to get the impression that this is complex, well, it is. I think TurboGears has successfully made it as uncomplex as possible. In fact, I went back and installed Ruby on Rails just as a comparison, and I would say they're very comparable. Now, I don't know Ruby well enough to actually use it, so I just, you know, typed in the Ruby commands per their tutorial, and I would say that TurboGears is successfully has made it as easy and as good user-friendly installation as Ruby on Rails. Having said that, this is not for the faint of heart necessarily. I mean, going through the 20-minute tutorial like I did last week, that's simple, and you get a working TurboGears, instant feedback, and you get the basic wiki running instantaneously. It's just when you try to do the detailed setup to your database and everything that you run into slightly more complexity. So I hope I'm being fair to all this and not overwhelming people. Moving right along, in the setup of this thing, one thing I noticed right away was that Kevin Rangore and the team who have made TurboGears use, in their Python code, they use a lot of decorators. Now, decorators are an advanced language feature which only recently entered. At least they weren't here when I started out 5 or 6 years ago. I think Python was on 1.5 at the time version. And decorators, along with iterators and generators, for that matter, and list comprehensions, did not exist yet. So what this did, it made me go back and study up on decorators, and while I was at it, on generators and iterators. I've still never used these concepts in my actual code, but in a future podcast, I'm definitely going to have one on decorators, and I might as well cover iterators and generators and list comprehensions at the same time. I don't use them in my code yet, except for list comprehensions, but in terms of reading Python code, it's very important to be able to read Python code, and modern Python code is beginning to use these concepts. So although I'm tempted, I'll avoid going into them during this podcast. I'll save it for a very shortly upcoming podcast because they are very important, but I want to stay on topic here. TurboGears. So you keep walking through the installation process, and maybe you're halfway through almost at this point. You set up some forms. Again, it's all using, at this point, the KID templating language, and I think the tutorial is very clear. You won't have any problems with it. So moving right along, the only thing that might throw you is if you're not familiar with decorators. And basically, what these decorators are, as you define class methods and functions, if you have the little @ @turbogears.expose, for instance, that is a decorator right in front of a method or a function, which means that that function is a decorator and has class, it's a class function. I better wait to go into that into a future podcast because it is an advanced feature after all. And I don't want to lose, those of you out there who are beginners and newbies like myself, please, this TurboGears presentation is going to be a little more detailed, complex than some, so hang in there with me. I've got some easier stuff towards the end. But then, you're just going through and setting these up. You do use some regular expressions, but what I did for setting this up, since I'm not big on decorators or regular expressions, was I simply typed in the regular expressions and the decorator functions exactly like Kevin Rangore did in the tutorial. So I'm not saying that I could have created a different version of this nearly as quickly. But it's quite easy to go through, other than the database problems I had, to go through the rest of this installation if you do exactly what Kevin said. And, of course, you could customize it a little without too much difficulty. So, moving right along, we're more than halfway through. I'm thumbing through the tutorial as I talk, and I'm not dwelling on anything that was trivially easy. You convert some arguments. Everything's a decorator at this point. Add a page list. You use the kid template language some more. And basically, you're almost through. Okay, the next to the last section of setting this up involves AJAX. Now, AJAX, as you might recall, stands for Asynchronous JavaScript and XML. And it's all the rage. It's all the buzzword for interactive websites these days. Well, basically, TurboGears covers it in a tricky way. Instead of using AJAX, it uses something called JSON, J-S-O-N, which is an easy and lightweight way to do the same thing that AJAX does with browsers. And I forget what JSON stands for. I think it stands for something like JavaScript. I can't remember. But at any rate, it uses JSON instead of AJAX. It's a very similar technology. It's a JavaScript. So there is JavaScript involved in setting up this wiki using TurboGears. I mean, you do have to know a little JavaScript, which is probably the next easiest language to Python, so I wouldn't let that scare you away. So you'll use JavaScript in order to put in some header files and some meta files, title, and then some JavaScript using MochiKit. MochiKit, another major component of TurboGears. I apologize for talking so fast on this. People have complained I talk too fast. I'll try to slow down. Okay. Now, there's quite a bit of this MochiKit, JavaScript, JSON. But again, as long as you type in exactly what he said, you'll be using MochiKit and JavaScript to call an XML HTTP request function. And that's part of the interface that is necessary using MochiKit. .dom. And in this fantastically quick run through, we've reached the end. Now, obviously, I didn't go through all the gory details here, and I hope you can appreciate why. But again, other than the installation of my SQL server, or the reinstallation of it, and getting the header file in the right place, there was nothing inherently difficult. However, going through and trying to understand what you're doing takes a lot longer than 20 minutes. I mean, I did it in 20 minutes probably last week, by just, you know, screaming through. But in trying to understand, it took me, counting setting up the SQL server, it took me 3 hours probably. And it was 3 hours well spent. I learned a lot. And I really believe that TurboGears is the equal of Ruby on Rails. I can't compare it really to Django or any of the other great frameworks for web programming that are Python-based, like Zope. But I suspect that they each have their place. I think that TurboGears is for ease of setup, ease of use. Zope is probably more complex and more capable still, and perhaps Django also. The one thing I will say is I now have a working wiki and server setup on my Mac here at home. But that doesn't do me much good because I don't think I can use it over my cable modem. The speed will be too slow. My website is hosted on a remote server, and I'm a little daunted at the idea of setting this TurboGears up on my remote server. I may go ahead and try to do it, but I'm not going to try right away because, truthfully, I don't need a database-based web server yet on my AwareTech website, and I can do everything I want, really, with simpler tools and CGI. And also, I'm not sure about the permissions and setting up the SQL server and things like that on there. So this is not as lightweight a tool as most of the other things I do. And I hope that those of you who are looking for a web framework and who either hopefully you will host your own website on your own computer. That would be the best way to install this. If you have to install it on a remote server, God bless you. It may go okay or it may not. But it brings me back to the thought that I really do like lightweight tools as a hobbyist. And there's nothing wrong with lightweight tools if they are what you enjoy. And so I wanted to mention some of the lightweight tools that I have found useful in doing, web programming in particular, but maybe other kinds also. So first and foremost, since I do a lot of CGI programming and I enjoy that immensely, I've done a lot of screen scraping. In my Ask Merlin program, I used to get all the information from the web by screen scraping the Google website or the Yahoo website or one of those search engines. And when Google came out with their API, that made my life much easier. And then Mark Pilgrim, I believe it was, came up with the PyGoogle module, which gives you Pythonic access to the Google API. That has been one of the most useful tools I have ever used. And I will have links to this. Everything I mention in this podcast, I will have links on my website. But PyGoogle, it gives you authorized access to the Google API. So it couldn't be simpler. And for most purposes in my programming, that has replaced screen scraping. And you can do a ton of stuff with PyGoogle. In fact, one really interesting book I have that I've had for a while now is the O'Reilly book, Google Hacks. And I enjoy that Google Hacks book. Most of the hacks in there are written in Perl, but you can convert them to Python because they're pretty short. But some of them in there are written in Python, including some by Mark Pilgrim using PyGoogle, and I really enjoy it. And I encourage that. I may do a podcast someday on PyGoogle. But in the meantime, I do find, as I'm looking to the next stage of what I want to do with Ask Merlin, I'm finding I still have to do some screen scraping. PyGoogle allows me to get search engine results and popularity of search engine requests, but I need to be able to screen some information, scrape some information off of screens that the Google API does not expose to me. And I used to do this by hand using some tricks that studying Hans Nowak's web spider program, MyGale, taught me. But when I found something called Beautiful Soup is a Python module to help screen scrapers. And this is a tremendous boon because it makes it so much simpler. What you do is you feed a web page or a URL into the Beautiful Soup module, and it collects and organizes all of the data and the kinds of data from there so that then you can call simple Python functions to find the title, what tags are there, and other basic information. So recommend Beautiful Soup, and I'll put a link on the website. Next, I'm going to mention one that I bet you've never heard of. You may have heard of Beautiful Soup. You may have heard of PyGoogle. But I bet you haven't heard of the particular NLQ module I'm going to mention now. NLQ stands for Natural Language Query. And there are some very sophisticated Python packages to do this sort of work, to parse language, such as English, text, and extract various meaningful informations from it. But I found those to be too complex for my simple needs, and early on, like the very first year I was a Python programmer, I found a poor, cute, abandoned module that some great Pythonista had written, not very long, but very easy to understand. And that's one of the advantages of simple tools. They can be very easy to understand. So I have used that NLQ module ever since. I also added to the NLQ module and made it more effective for certain tasks. And I planned on adding to it again. Now, the original NLQ module, as useful as it was a little bit of spaghetti code, and my additions have been very spaghetti code. So I need to clean it up. This is one of my biggest faults as a programmer. I need to clean it up so that other people can use it. But I use it in my Ask Merlin program. You'll see it if you look at the source code. And I'm going to use it a lot, along with Beautiful Soup, to do the kinds of screen scraping and then analysis of the text that is scraped to take Ask Merlin to the next level. Right now, my Ask Merlin script, which I have as a CGI on my website, it takes a question that you type in on any subject, and then you give it options to choose from, and it picks the correct option. The next version of Ask Merlin that I've always had in mind, you don't have to give options. You just ask a question, and you get an answer from Ask Merlin. And that's what I need, the NLQ module and Beautiful Soup. So I'll put links to all of this on my website. Okay, now I'm going to go into some miscellaneous announcements and commentary. First off, on the commentary side, I heard another interesting podcast interview with Larry Wall this week. Actually, this one wasn't an interview. It was the State of the Union address to OSCON. He gives one of these every year, I guess. And this one is on IT conversations. It's about a half hour long, and it's very interesting. I won't dwell on it, but the whole philosophy of how languages evolve is very interesting, too. I really like the philosophy of Python because it is pragmatic and practical. And, you know, even what some people see as warts, I see as benefits. The fact that people in the Python community tend to roll their own, they tend to create, as I said, many, many web frameworks instead of one uber framework like Ruby on Rails. But each framework is optimized for slightly different parameters. Same way with the smaller tools out there, and there's so many of them. And I enjoy this because some of them fit me to a T. And I think that Larry Wall is trying to get to that a little bit with Perl 6, which has been 5 years in coming. And I think, you know, just looking at the way things evolve, I love Python's position as a general-purpose language. Now, some of the other commentary, some interesting things going on. I've mentioned the FireDrop 2 tool written by Hans Nowak that I use to manage my website and my blog. And it is now being upgraded to manage podcasts. This was an idea I had. And Fuzzy Man, also known as Michael Moore, has taken over maintenance and development of FireDrop 2 from Hans, because Hans is so busy on Wax and other things. And Michael Moore, with a little bit of help from me, not much, is going to make this a podcast management program, which is quite interesting. And in fact, I've also joined a development email list, founded by Doug Kay, the head of IT Conversations. He's looking to build a Python program of somewhat of more ambitious nature to not only manage podcasts, but to create podcasts and to web spider around the web and collect podcasts. This is an ambitious project to make it easier for a group of podcasters to do collective work. And I'm going to recommend FireDrop and also Hans Mygale Web Spider as possible components that might be helpful towards those bigger goals. So I encourage you to look into FireDrop if you are looking for a content management, a blog, or a podcast tool. And I'm going to interview Michael Moore. He'll be my first interviewee on this podcast series, and that'll be coming up soon. I have to buy some equipment, a mixer and a preamp, and do some Skype study, and it's quite difficult to get good sound quality, and I only want to do it with good quality. So Michael Moore will be the first, and then, you know, you're going to hear many people from the Python community be interviewed here so that you can get information from lots of people, not just myself with my limited knowledge. Maybe someday I can go to PyCon and do interviews there. That would be wonderful. Okay, so that's one set of announcements. Upcoming podcasts will include Decorators, Generators, and Iterators. That's a podcast unto itself. Another podcast I'm going to do strictly on HTML, XHTML, and JavaScript as they relate to Python, because these are tools that you need to work with Python. You may not actually need to do Ajax, but you need to understand these tools for web programming. And I do see there's a new book out on Ajax from A-Press, the first one, I believe, and I hope to get a copy of that and study up on Ajax. I was going to look into, and I think I mentioned this, a couple of the commercial IDEs, particularly Komodo. And I looked into that. I read a really nice review, and Komodo and Wing IDE came out on top. I went to both their sites. The problem is you have to register, and they jump you through all kinds of hoops to actually download and use a beta version for the Mac that I have in the case of Komodo. So I haven't gotten around to that yet. But I also probably will want to include in those analyses some free, open source, free as in beer and free as in freedom IDEs like Leo, the literate editor. Leo, the literate editor. So I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully you can too. And as I mentioned, I definitely am going to do a podcast on PyGoogle and web scraping-like activities. So I think Yahoo has an API just like PyGoogle does that I used, but I wound up going back to PyGoogle because that's the one I'm most familiar with. And these are really good tools, and some tools written around it. Mark Pilgrim wrote a nice tool called Googly.py using PyGoogle, which makes it even more friendly for Python programming. And so I'm going to have a podcast on all of those kinds of topics rolled together. I look forward to more feedback from the audience. In addition to interviews, I would welcome guest podcasts or any kind of feedback. I've been getting more and more emails, for which I am very appreciative. Okay, in fact, I'm going to actually mention some of the feedback I got. Thank you for those cards and letters, those emails. And I'm very pleased to get them. Rodolfo Gouvet says, "Hi there. Your last show you talked about Doug Kay." Rodolfo actually was the one who recommended that I go to Doug Kay's weblog because Doug Kay put out a notice that he was looking for Python programmers to do some podcast software. Thank you, Rodolfo. I did go to Doug Kay's weblog and sign up, and I talked to Doug Kay about it, and who knows? Maybe he'll use some of our programs. Maybe I can contribute. Another one from Colin Chua. Colin Chua from LinuxWaves.com says he's very interested in Python again, thanks to Python 411. However, he disagrees with me on PHP being a quick and dirty language. He says he agrees with me that Python has a great niche, but so does PHP, which was developed solely for web programming. Like you said, Python is good for everything. Therefore, Python is a general-purpose language. I agree with you, Colin, and I certainly didn't mean to badmouth PHP, which I haven't used, but it sounds like it was created for quick and dirty web programming, and by golly, it's great at it. Dennis Scales tells me that he likes the Miscellaneous podcast where I spoke of Turbo Gears, and he says, "I watched the video last week and downloaded and tried it out. I wouldn't consider myself an expert programmer. I used Fortran and Access Basic in the early 90s, picked up Python 2 years ago and love it because it's so versatile. I manage IT operations and security, and Python helps me do that. Anyway, I've tried Zope and eventually went to CGI to do Novus level web stuff. In the last week with Turbo Gears, I was able to web enable a security tool I used to enumerate Windows hosts and servers. It was unbelievable. Better yet, I was able to easily send my code to a friend who installed Turbo Gears. He dropped the file in place, and it worked perfectly. I'm really excited about its possibilities. Thanks, and keep up the good work." Thank you, Dennis Scales. I've got to say, you say you're a Python user since Thanksgiving 2003. Thanks for the feedback on Turbo Gears, and I hope some of you stuck around to hear that testimonial. And I hope, Dennis, that you noticed I did do another podcast about it. Okay, here's one from Salim Fadli in London, England, works for Morgan Stanley. He says, "Just tuned into the podcast. Great work. You are doing very important work." Well, I don't know about that, but thank you. He says, "I'm a professional, and you make it a joy. The community makes it a joy. Now the feedback. In the 3 episodes I heard, there seems to be some strange reverb on your voice. It sounds like you are recording in a very large tiled room. Perhaps some foam or sound absorbent material." Well, I don't know. I emailed you, Salim, and said, "I don't hear this reverb in my listening on my iPod or my computer. If anyone else hears this reverb, let me know. I'm definitely going to try to improve the sound quality. In fact, thanks to my friend Rob over at Podcast 411, I've just made the decision to upgrade my sound equipment so that I can do much better sound quality and also do high quality interviewing using Skype. So maybe that will help, Salim. I hope so." But he goes on to say that, "I really like the content-heavy, no-nonsense approach you have, but could I suggest an enhancement to the show structure? Especially, put out all the meta stuff at the end. Talk about popularity, podcast alley, greets to other podcasters shouldn't come before the main substance of the show. I think it's a common mistake made by podcasters to hide really good content in an overlong introduction." Well, Salim, I hope you noticed, if you're listening, that I did take your advice, and I put the main meat of the content right up front this time, and I saved all of the miscellaneous towards the end. Thank you, Salim. So we're open to feedback. One more here from Stanko. Stanko says, "Love your Python 411 podcast. Really excellent. I use it with learning Python, and it's very helpful. I've not yet decided which book to choose after learning Python. I have read your book reviews on my website, and I can't decide between programming Python and dive into Python. I also have Python Cookbook at home. I am a beginner. Python is my first language. What is your opinion? Which book will do better?" You know, all three of those you mentioned, or all four, are so excellent, it's hard for me to recommend one over the other. But since you read Learning Python, I guess if I had to choose, I would recommend Programming Python next, because it is a follow-on to Learning Python. It's a very thick book. It's not introductory. So I would recommend Programming Python. So there you have it. I've got a whole bunch of more here. Well, okay, I'll read one more email. And I apologize to all of you who sent them in, whom I didn't read. I'm going to try to read more in future times. Okay, this is subject fan mail from Colin Shortland. He says, in this day and age, we are quick to condemn and criticize and demand our rights. Unfortunately, we don't always give the same amount of praise to build up people. To this end, I try to distribute praise where I have found good works by us. I have been dabbling with Python for a couple of years, but as a university student, I have had to endure C++ and Java. Oh, you have my sympathies, Colin. Actually, I like Java, but recently I got some casual work writing Python scripts, and this led to a Google of Python tutorials, something a little more advanced than the good old Hello World. Your site came up fairly early in the search results, and I have found your site to be a really useful source of information. I have even downloaded a couple of podcasts, which I listened to today on the bus going to the university. I particularly like your description of Python as, quote, executable pseudocode, unquote, which is a most fitting description. I'm a real Python fan, and Python is the one place where I don't mind spam. Thank you, Colin. Oh, so I love feedback. I love it. It makes this so worthwhile, and I have so many ideas I want to do, but as you can imagine, time is always of the essence. I have a very demanding day job, but I'm working away on this, and please, if I fall down, if some of these aren't as good as others, or if I miss a week, don't judge me too hard, because I guarantee I'm coming back strong again. And oh, one piece of feedback that I get often in my real life and in my podcasting world is that I talk too fast. And I know I didn't do any better on that in this podcast, because I always try to fit so much in. But I will work on that, especially for those of you for whom English is a second language. And that's a big part of the programming community. And I think over half my emails come from outside the United States. And I do want to talk more slowly and clearly. So I apologize again for not having done that better this time. So I certainly have ideas for new shows that I haven't mentioned, but the ones that I have mentioned that will be coming up on decorators, I've really studied up on decorators and also on iterators and generators, and they're not so hard. Now, decorators are a little harder than generators, I'll admit, but, you know, iterators and generators, and of course list comprehensions, can be extremely easy and useful. But decorators, okay, they're hard, but I see them popping up everywhere. So power programmers using Python must really love them. And we non-power hobbyists need to learn them so that, if nothing else, so that we can read them and modify existing programs. Because, again, you can do so much good by just modifying existing programs. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every time you program. I see I'm approaching the end of my allotted time. It's been swell. I hope that my garbled, rushed presentation does not detract from the wonderful content available in the world of Python. And this is the Python 411 podcast series coming to you again soon, computer programming for everybody.